It's 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. Overcrowding in the Illinois prison system has officials putting inmates in some rather unusual places. Yesterday, we heard from inmates recently released from the Vienna prison who lived in an administration building that has only 7 toilets but is housing 600 inmates. WBEZ, the public radio station in Chicago, wants to visit that building, but Governor Pat Quinn has said no. Today, we turn our attention to another prison that Governor Quinn is keeping out of public view. Vandalia is in southern Illinois, and some inmates at the prison there are housed in basements that regularly flood and are likely filled with mold. Several former inmates say when they complained about the living situation, they were threatened by prison employees. Robert Wildeboer reports.
Because of his drug and alcohol addictions, Lewis Wilkins has spent much of his adult life in and out of prisons. He did his most recent stint at Vandalia. He ended up there because he'd been working construction for a friend, and the friend refused to pay him for work he'd done. There's no need to go into all the details, but being ripped off was the final indignity in a long string, so Wilkins decided to take action. He broke into his friend's truck, stole some equipment, and as you've already figured out, he was caught.
I wasn't thinking. If I would have been thinking, I would have just said, you know what, you can have that money, man, and just, you know, said, all right.
Wilkins pleaded guilty and was sentenced to 4 years. At Vandalia, Wilkins was assigned to live with 100 other men in a basement room. When he first got there, other inmates warned him that after it rains, the basement floods. He figured it wouldn't be a big deal, a few wet spots here and there. Not so. He says there was an inch of water across the entire room, and they'd use shop vacs to clean it up, but the water kept coming.
They put us actually on shifts at night. I'm laying here sleeping. I got somebody next to me underneath my bunk using a shock vac, you know, and this here for like 2, 3, 4 days at a time that we would have to do this here constantly around the clock.
Wilkins says in the bathroom, when you flushed the toilet, sewage would seep through cracks in the floor. I talked to several Vandalia inmates who said it was so hot and humid in those packed basements that condensation would collect on the ceiling and drip down on them. Recently released inmates, including Wilkins, said there was also a lot of mold and the prison's fix was to simply paint over it. But Wilkins says, I don't have to believe just him. He picks up a printout of a report on Vandalia done by the John Howard Association, a nonpartisan group that monitors prisons.
Like, my word ain't too good because I'm convicted felon. But the word of these people who come down here, their word, you know, weighs a little bit more. And it's all in their report. You know, thank God they made it there and they got in on, I can actually show you.
The 19-page report details the John Howard Association's observations and then provides explanations given by prison administrators. For example, John Howard saw a flooded basement. The Vandalia administration said it was an anomaly. John Howard noted bare wires hanging from the ceiling where there used to be a light fixture. The administration responded that the incident hadn't been reported. John Howard volunteers breathed air in dorms that was dank and smelled strongly of mildew and mold. The administration had a staff member assess the air, and their report found that Vandalia is better, quote, than most facilities at inhibiting mold growth. I'm no expert, but that doesn't sound like the gold standard of mold suppression. And in their report, John Howard seemed skeptical, too, noting that the findings were hard to reconcile with their observations. We wanted to go to Vandalia for ourselves and report back to you on conditions that seemed to warrant a closer look. We've been seeking access for several months, but Governor Pat Quinn is keeping us out. According to Quinn spokeswoman Brooke Anderson, reporters can't visit the minimum security prison because of safety and security concerns. So what exactly are the safety and security concerns? That's one of the questions we have for Quinn, but Anderson has refused to go on tape to answer our questions. And now I've talked to several former inmates like Lewis Wilkins who say when they tried to voice concerns, they were threatened with retaliation by prison employees.
You know, I had to pipe down on the situation because I was trying to go to school to get my GED.
Wilkins says when he asked for grievances, the forms inmates used to write out complaints, the correctional officers said he needn't bother because they'd just throw out the grievances anyway. And he says they also threatened to put him in segregation, which would have meant he couldn't attend his GED classes. In a written statement, the Department of Corrections says the allegations of threats are disturbing, but it has found no merit to the claims, though the department says it's a serious matter and it will be reviewing the issue further. As for Wilkins, he says he stopped complaining so he could get his GED, but he's simmering with anger for how he was treated.
I committed a crime. And the judge sentenced me. He did not say, Mr. Wilkins, you would be sentenced to 4 years living in unhealthy conditions to be treated or be housed like an animal. I wouldn't even house an animal like that.
If you're going to choose to lock up almost 50,000 prisoners, then you have to pay the bill for doing it in a humane, decent way. The Constitution doesn't say you have constitutional rights if you can afford them. The Constitution says you have to do this. So Illinois either has to let some people out of prison or has to improve the conditions, which is going to mean spending more money.
Alan Mills is an attorney with the Uptown People's Law Center in Chicago, which is suing the Department of Corrections over conditions at Vianna, the prison we reported on yesterday. Mills says they've got a lawsuit against Vandalia that they're ready to move on, but there's a problem. In order to file a lawsuit, inmates have to complete the grievance process at the prison. A lawsuit can't be filed as long as a complaint is still pending. Mills says he believes prison administrators are purposely sitting on those grievances to make a lawsuit impossible.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, some grievances get dealt with within a week. After 6 months, I know from my personal experience that clearly somebody's slowing things down.
In a written statement, the Department of Corrections insists they strive to promptly respond to all grievances and appropriately address concerns raised in complaints. As for the lawsuit Mills hopes to file, it's focused solely on conditions.
This is purely a forward-looking lawsuit. We are not trying to figure out what living in these conditions is worth to somebody and therefore trying to get damages for all these individual prisoners. Nobody's trying to get rich off of this. All we're trying to do is change the conditions so that Illinois does not run such a horrible prison anymore in the future.
Illinois spends more than $1 billion a year on prisons, about $20,000 per year per inmate. The conditions inside matter because the prisoners in Vandalia, they're going to be released, many within months. And like Lewis Wilkins, a lot of them are getting angry. Wilkins says he sometimes wakes up crying and can't get back to sleep as his mind races over his experiences at Vandalia and the politicians and administrators he holds responsible.
Eventually, they will have to answer to God. They might don't see their punishment here on earth, but they will one day. When they get in front of the Maker, they'll see it.
Wilkins says he often thinks of people still imprisoned at Vandalia. He says they may have committed crimes, but they should not be forced to live like that. I'm Robert Wildeboer.
That report and the one we aired yesterday came to us from public radio station WBEZ in Chicago. And now Governor Pat Quinn is responding to WBEZ's reports of inhumane conditions. Quinn was asked whether prisoners should have to live in conditions that include vermin, flooding, and leaking sewage.
No, I want to look into any specifics that deal with the conditions. I want to always pay attention to that, and we'll take a look at that and investigate everything.
But despite repeated requests, Governor Quinn says he will not let reporters in to see the conditions firsthand.
Yeah, well, I don't believe in that. I think that it's important that when it comes to our security of our prisons, I go with the correctional office, the director that I have in the Department of Corrections. Security comes first, and it isn't a country club.
Quinn says running a prison system is a big job. He says if reforms need to be made to improve prison conditions, he wants to make sure they are done properly.
WILL programming is made possible by Community Concierge Magazine. Every issue includes an event calendar, attractions, and maps, as well as a business and shopping guide. Community Concierge Magazine is distributed throughout East Central Illinois and always presents the CU area at its best.
It's 12:50. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on listener-supported public radio, WILL, AM 580.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 10th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Lawrence Binyon, born Lancaster, England, 1869, best known for his poem For the Fallen, which he wrote to honor First World War dead, which includes the lines, "They shall grow not old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them." It's the birthday of the poet Joyce Sutphen, born in St. Cloud, Minnesota, 1949, grew up on a farm near St. Joseph, Minnesota. She said, "Like many of the people I had read about, I set out on a long journey to find truth and beauty. As usual, the road led straight back to the beginning, home, country roads, the sun setting through the woods." It was on this date, 1846, the U.S. Congress passed legislation creating the Smithsonian Institution. James Smithson was an English scientist, the illegitimate son of a nobleman and a widow related to the royal family, born in secret in Paris, never married, spent his life traveling, getting to know great scientific minds, and shortly before he died in 1829, he bequeathed his estate to his nephew. But if the nephew died childless, Smithson wrote, then the money was to go to the United States for the foundation of an institution for the increase and diffusion of knowledge. The nephew died without heirs, and so the money came here. There was a big debate about the Smithsonian. The Federalists were in favor of it. The supporters of states' rights argued the Constitution didn't make any provisions for a national institution, but the Federalists won out. And then people argued about what Smithson meant by the phrase increase and diffusion of knowledge. Did he mean a research institute, an observatory, publishing house, library, museum, or what? And in the end, it became all of those things. Smithsonian includes museums of natural history, American history, fine and decorative arts, air and space technology, 16 museums in all, plus the National Zoo. And it was on this date in 1519 that Ferdinand Magellan set off to sail around the world. He left with a